This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rockin. Yes, hello, everybody. Good morning. It is the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on a Friday. Mr. Mayor, hello there.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I couldn't be better. Nice to have you aboard, as always.
Nice to be here. It's summer is here.
Yeah, what's it's great.
Well,
huh?
It's going to be chilly. Chilly Mother's Day. A little bit of showers tomorrow morning. Forecast. Why do we always talk about the weather?
No, you always do. You bring it up
because it's a nice thing to start with.
Bring it up.
And we're all looking forward to the weekend.
We are indeed. We've been talking about it all week. Obviously, the bomb up in Times Square on Saturday. It's being analyzed, obviously, the feds and everybody else interviewing Faisal Shahzad here. The disturbing part about this is that, of course, NYPD, great job, FBI, etc. But we got by the skin of our teeth. We got lucky on this one.
It is fair to say that if you walked into most stores to buy propane tank in the suburbs, you could. Nobody make a big deal of it. Nobody think twice. Fireworks, maybe they'd think, although in Pennsylvania sells fireworks to anybody that comes from outside the state. They won't sell them to people that live in the state because they're dangerous.
Hey, brilliant.
Think about that. They really do.
I know that.
And then, you know, what happened here is not as competent a person in building a bomb, thank God. But if somebody wanted to, we live in a society where you can... Listen, you could take a knife or a gun or your car, and if you wanted to plow it into, you can do that. Fortunately, people, particularly in our society, respect life generally. There's always somebody that doesn't. And, you know, were we lucky? Yes, we were lucky in the sense that the guy wasn't very competent and the bomb didn't go off, although the timer went off. That's what the vendors and then the cop noticed.
Yeah, I talked to the vendor, Dwayne, and I said to him, I said, if this had turned out differently, you and I would not be talking because you were standing right next to them.
That's right. And I think it also shows, I was asked yesterday, what did you learn or what pleased you or disappointed you? The training. The police knew what to do. The fire department knew what to do. Office Emergency Management had done the coordination in advance. It worked. Everybody knew.
Bomb squad.
Everybody had their job. And if you remember, when we put in this SIMS, this agreement between all of the agencies as to who will do what and who's the responsible when one agency versus another, a lot of people criticized it. Oh, it'll never work, this, that, and the other thing. We've never had a complaint since. I don't remember one. I'm sure there's been a little bit of hassle here and there. There always is two people pushing. Both guys try to get through the door at the same time. Both guys want to take responsibility. You have these agencies that have enormous pride and they think they can do anything and they want to do it. And that's, you want that. That's what you train them to do. But you have to control it and keep it from getting out of hand. And we've done that and it worked. The cops knew how to clear the area. The fire department was there in case the bomb had gone off. They worked well with the FBI, which we've done again and again and again. Joint Terrorism Task Force was responsible. We didn't put out information we didn't know. It's afterwards then, and you know, it's also funny. People are criticizing whichever federal agency lost the guy between Connecticut and the rear, and the airport. As Kelly said, you know, in surveillance, you have to stay far away, or the person that doesn't realize that would realize you're following them, and if you do that, the chances of another car cutting in. So they lose people all the time. Fortunately, a customs guy showed some real smarts, saw the name on the list, and stopped the guy from getting away. Why he ever got that far is something they should look at, and you know,
it is being looked at and questioned certainly.
Yeah, I mean, criticized is one thing. We all want to do that. The real issue is figuring out what happened and putting in procedures so it doesn't happen again. Then I think you go back and say, wait a second, why didn't you have a procedure, whatever it was? And you know, unless you're part of it, you don't know the details. Everybody wants to assign blame. Bottom line is, it didn't go off. We caught the guy. Looks like he got trained overseas. Looks like he was here acting alone, although had connections back. And we got to keep training and keep, you know, public. When they see something, they got to say something. That was one of the keys here.
You were in Washington this week lobbying for a number of things, but one of the things was more money so that things like the Ring of Iron here in Lower Manhattan can be expanded and things of that nature.
The federal government generally does not pay for something you've already done. And so if we buy a piece of equipment, they won't pay for it. If we don't buy it, they might give us the money to buy it. Now, that's just the way it works.
I mean, it's like Pennsylvania selling fireworks to out-of-state people.
One of the things you could do is you can say, okay, let's run the risk of not having the piece of equipment until we get the money. I happen to think that's irresponsible. And in the city, we've never done that. We've gone and bought the equipment we need and then gone to Washington trying to get the money, which we have not been as successful as in terms of dollars if we'd done it in the other order. But I don't know how to look people in the eye and say, I'm sorry, we didn't keep the city safe because we're waiting for Washington to come through. Washington's going to point fingers. We're going to point fingers back and forth. The difference I've always argued between New York City and every place else, we reach into our pockets, we take out our wallets, we spend the money, whether it's to repair our bridges before they fall apart. So we don't have any substandard bridges, whereas Pennsylvania's got lots. And Ed Rendell is a good governor, actually a very good guy, and he's trying to get federal money to fix all the bridges in Pennsylvania. But the taxpayers in Pennsylvania, I argue, should have been all these years reaching into their pockets and fixing their bridges. We have done that here in the city. You look at the Harlem River, we've rebuilt almost every single one of those bridges with our money. Now, if we can get some money from the feds to help pay for it or from the state, that's great. But we're going to go ahead, keep the city safe, train, have adequate staff. And even then, there's no guarantees. I mean, no matter how many cops, firefighters, fire engines, police stations, cameras you have, we're going to spend in our budget.
Do you get any sympathy over this argument?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
No. Everybody pays lip service to it. Yeah, you go do it. But then, you don't. I mean, the federal government, about 2 years ago, they had a program to give you money for more cops. We didn't get any of the money because they said, oh, you've already got enough. Yeah, we got enough because we're paying for it ourselves. The other places ran the risks of not having them, and they get the money. It is just unfair. And it's like what's happening in Albany. They cut revenue sharing 5% or less for every single one of 57 counties. The other five, because there's a total of 62, got cut 100%. You want to guess what five counties? I can tell you. Bronx County, Kings County, Queens County, Richmond County, and Manhattan County. In other words, New York City. We got cut 100% in revenue sharing. The rest of the state got cut less than 5%. And the answer is, oh, you guys, you know, you have all the stuff. You don't need our money.
Well, maybe the city should just stop paying for. I'm being facetious.
Unfortunately, they collect the taxes.
Right.
I thought about that. That would be cute, but.
Right.
They collect the taxes, then send us our share, so we got to be careful here and say nice. I've always argued, we fundamentally send a lot of money to Albany. They give a little bit of that money back to us. They call it aid. I call it a refund. And then they expect us to say thank you. It's our money we're getting back. What do you mean thank you?
Well, that's the whole thing about the federal taxes. When the government says the government's going to give you this, government's not giving you anything. It's just your
money. It's your
money. That they're spending.
I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
the worst words you can hear, right?
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm the government. I'm here to help you.
Unless it's the city government of New York.
Of course. Well, speaking of that and budgets, we will in just a moment. And if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg this Friday morning, please get in line right now, 800-321. 800-321-0710. We want to hear from you. You'll hear from us in just a minute. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. Again, if you've got the questions, we'll see if we get you a line here. 800-321-0710 from Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Do you think that the events of last Saturday night, or let me say don't think, do you know, did they affect your decision on not cutting police with the budget problem?
I don't know how to answer that. You always want to have more security, but there's a limit to what you can afford. The crime rate has come down 9 years in a row. This is the ninth year. It continues to come down. A few more murders than last year, but still the second lowest at this point in the year. The numbers are so small, they jump up and down, and when they jump up a little bit, everybody says, oh, we need more cops. We've had roughly the same number of cops for the last 4 or 5 years, and crime has continued to come down, and the murder rate has come down every year. We went from 25% worse than last year to 11% worse than last year in 2 weeks. So, you know, you got to be careful in looking at the numbers. Do we have enough? There's no good answer to that. You'd always, if something happens...
Yeah, more cops would not have affected Saturday's event.
Would not have affected Saturday's. On the other hand, what we are worried about is cops retiring, and I'd like to have some more in the pipeline. What I've said is we will not cut the size of the department. Whether or not we can expand it or not, we'll have to see. Part of it is... what happens, how much aid we get from Albany or from Washington. Ray has been very good, Ray Kelly, our police commissioner, at using technology. Our real-time crime center has helped catch some of the bad guys and clear some of the backlog of unsolved crimes. It is very useful in that. We keep training. Our fire department keeps getting better and better. But you don't have to have the same numbers that you had before because we've had them before. You have to constantly change. And it's constantly a decision of either or. You can't, the old days of everybody goes together and everybody gets a little more or everybody gets cut the same probably are gone for a long time. That's just not going to happen. The public doesn't want to pay any more taxes. And in fact, our tax revenue is lower than it was. And it's not going to come back as quickly as you'd like it to, although someday it will. So we're going to have to make some either-or decisions. What is good is, you know, we have some things that we've had for a long time and are never used. And you can see, I'll give you a good example. It's a state example. But the state has some juvenile justice prisons, jails upstate that have nobody in them. No clients, if you will, no prisoners. They have not closed them. Why? Because it's jobs in the local community.
What do they do? Stand around all
day? I guess. But the downturn in the state's financial situation is forcing the state to, I think they're going to finally close them. So sometimes some of this is good. I've always thought that if you keep throwing money at problems, you never fix anything. And that's, unfortunately, the easiest thing to do. Let's vote more money. Congress does it all the time because they can print money.
That's the only response they have.
The state does it more than they should because they can borrow money. The city can't borrow for operating expenses and can't print. So we've had a financial discipline imposed on us. Now, I don't know what would happen if we didn't have that discipline, but we've had a discipline imposed on us. And that stood us well. And today... we are in a much better fiscal situation than we would have been. We started 3 or 4 years ago saving money, cutting back. We've had, this is the 8th program we're in right now of reducing expenses. The trouble is some of the things we don't control, like pensions and health care, keep going up. And over the last, since 2002 to 2011, our revenues have gone up about 62%, our expenses about 61%. Between 2010 and 2011, our revenues are up a couple percent, our expenses are down a couple percent. The trouble is that our pension costs and health costs are up dramatically. The average worker in New York City's government has benefits equal to 75% of their salary. Uniform service is 100%, everybody else 50, it averages out to about 75%. And that's just something we can't afford.
We are seeing that not only here in the city, but we are seeing it in the state, we're seeing it in the country, and we're seeing it overseas as well, in Greece and in other places. There was one particular op-ed piece in one of the papers this morning. It was kind of saying, well, you know, we should have done that, we could have done this, we should have done that, and we would have saved all of these hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, yeah, we could have, but that's not what the people wanted, and that's not what the politicians did.
Democracy is very democratic, both small d's. Capital D on democracy, democratic was small d. The elected officials tend to give the public what the polls say the public wants. That's not what I think they should do. We don't have a republic. We have a democracy. You're elected to then do what you think is right and not take a vote on every single thing. You see what happens in California. They have laws that say you can't do this and you must do that, and they're the same thing. And they're inconsistent, and you can't run a railroad that way. I think that you need leadership, whether it's in state, federal, or municipal government, to do what is right. Make the investments in tough times, even though people say, I don't want to do it. Don't kill the golden goose. Albany can easily, you know, if they hurt this city, that's their revenue source. But they're worried about the next election, not long term. Now, that's not everybody. There's some people. You know, if you take a look at the leadership, Shelley Silver is a guy who really does understand. And he gets criticized for a lot of things. I don't agree with him on everything, but I think he is actually a real adult and is looking out for the city. He's got to look out for his own membership. So, you know, we don't always agree. But his budget, for example, for the state is more rational than the state, than the Senate's or the governor's. And the minority leader in minority leaders don't have a lot of say, but the minority leader in the assembly and in the Senate, they have been helpful. In fact, our charter bill was just passed by the Senate with every Republican voting for it, and about, I think it was close to 20 of the majority of the Democrats voting for it. But without the minority in that case, it wouldn't have gotten done. And that's a good bill. And now, hopefully, Shelley will look at that and come to the conclusion that this is what's in the public's interest. We have something like 40,000 kids trying to get into 10,000 open places in charter schools. There's an enormous demand. Parents want these schools. And how do you say no to them? And there's all sorts of this stuff where government... there's this populist wave running through the country. Let's go after the banks and the insurance companies. And I was pleased to see that last night Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand stood up for our city and our taxpayers, and they really do deserve our thanks. They voted no on an amendment from Scott Brown that would have devastated an impact on the city's business and tax base. The Brown amendment would have explicitly and arbitrarily capped the size of financial firms, and then we couldn't compete with financial firms overseas. Would have been devastating for our country because nobody could finance, or if they're going to finance, they'd use banks overseas. And Schumer and Gillibrand did stand up, and they deserve
Glass
credit Steagall, for this.
Time to bring it back?
No, well, I was never all that in favor of ending it back then, although I didn't yell and scream, I will say. But I just sort of had, it was working. I couldn't figure out why you wanted to confuse the two. And I don't know why any investment bank really wants to be a commercial bank. I know why some of the commercial banks want to be investment banks. And you see some of the big commercial banks, a J.P. Morgan Chase, for example. They do a lot of all the same things an investment bank does. And now some of the investment banks, Morgan Stanley, Goldman, became banks to get access to federal funds in an emergency. The real problem is that Congress has different forms of regulation for different industries, but not common regulation for the same business. So an industry is hedge funds, an industry is commercial banks, an industry is investment banks, an industry is insurance companies. They're all in the same business. But if you change the name, I'm overstating it, but you have to change your charter and some other things. But fundamentally, if you change your name, you can pick your regulator. And that shouldn't be. And you can, if you pick your regulator, you can pick what businesses you can do. That's nonsensical. And the reason it continues is that every subcommittee or committee in Congress wants to continue their oversight
sure.
of their industry, even though the guy next door is doing it for the same business. We also cannot have regulation that's inconsistent with what's overseas. A U.S. company can simply do stuff overseas that they don't do here, or a foreign bank can do it, and an American borrower will go to the bank that's you wanted. Some of these, for some things, big companies need to go to the biggest banks. If we limit the size of our banks here, they're not going to deal with us. And if we have regulation here and taxing things here, they'll simply move that part of their business that generates the tax revenue overseas. And the people that go with it and the bonuses they get that they spend on services here and pay taxes here, that will go. And it's just very easy to be populist and say, oh, let's go after these guys. We need to have a healthy financial sector that can finance. If we want job growth, companies have to be able to borrow money. And if you take away things like the derivatives, which is today all loans are derivatives. No loan is done without some kind of hedging and financing. All of the enormous growth in home ownership came about because you had derivatives. Now, we got in trouble with it. A lot of people got hurt, but an awful lot more people have houses today they would not have had, because you'd never have the amount of money if you couldn't package those loans and sell them off to people around the world. The trouble is there was not enough disclosure. And the part of the finance of Chris Dodd's bill that I really support is the disclosure part. I'm in favor of everything being out there. Prices of a stock transaction, of a bond transaction, of a derivatives transaction. They don't always have to be on exchanges, because some things don't fit if they're one-off rather than standard things. But that would and better regulation and better disclosure. I've never had the problem with Sarbanes-Oxley that everybody else has. The more information you have about a company, the better off we are long-term as an economy. And some people say, well, it's very costly. Yes, it could be amended to have for small companies. They can't have the big staff, and maybe they shouldn't have as much. But fundamentally, if the public doesn't get the information on what they're buying, or if the directors of the company are not willing to sign the financial statements, I don't want them directors of my company, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I got you on that one. Stick right where you are, Mr. Mayor. We'll get right back to you. 800-321-0710. Let's see, I got one open line here. Mike is working the phone, so if you've got a question for the mayor, jump right in. It's now 26 before 9 o'clock. We've gone a little long here on this break.
10
WOR. That is the telephone number. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, we'll get to it in just a couple of minutes here. Yesterday, you went through the numbers on the budget and what you thought might, because you don't know what Albany's all about. Is there any indication where they're headed? I mean, are you getting any? You must be,
you know,
in conversation.
Yes,
but
every day I get indications, plus and minus, and the next day I get a minus and plus. I mean, that's the real world. They could be in, I joked, but it's not a joke. Albany's very different than, Albany and Washington both, are very different than New York City's legislative process. New York City's legislative process, it really is done out in the open. Every city councilman gets a chance to read every piece of legislation. They hold hearings. Then it gets to the mayor, and the mayor holds a public hearing. I don't think we've ever had a piece of legislation in 8 1/3 years we didn't have a public hearing. And one time I even changed my mind during the public hearing. It was a bill that we had sponsored. But after listening to the people, of course, it was passed over my veto when I said it. But regardless, they could be working behind the scenes. And all of a sudden, they'll come to an agreement. And what they'll do in the middle of the night, there's something called a message of necessity. The state law requires that every legislator has the time to read the bill, X number, 2-3 days, whatever it is. But in an emergency, the governor can sign a message of necessity that they have to pass it without taking any time.
And reading it, probably.
They have it in front of them. They can't read it. Other than a street naming or something like that, almost every piece of legislation for decades. So it's not just David Paterson. You blame every governor. That's just the way Albany works. And it doesn't mean the legislation they pass is bad. But it is a very different process than what goes on in New York City. And I've always thought New York City, particularly in the last 4 years, Quinn really has changed things, opened things up, a lot more visibility than ever before. And I think our form of legislative process deserves a lot of credit. I can never get anybody to write it, but that is true. But maybe they're working, to get back to your question, maybe they're working behind the scenes. I get some indication of that, but then I get some indication, no. And you can speculate all you want. You can read into my words, plus or minus or minus or plus. We just don't know. And we have 8 weeks before we have to pass this budget. It's got to be done before the end of June. It will be done on time. And we're going to have to just assume, unless Albany does something, we're going to have to assume the governor's budget. The state budget doesn't cut us quite as much. The Senate budget, the assembly budget, Shelley's come up with a budget that's better for the city. But it still cuts us a lot. So, but out of the three, I've got to go with the governor's budget because that's the worst-case scenario. And maybe it'll be even worse than that. Who knows?
So at this point, it is the 11,000 positions that you were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, we can move some things around here and there. But fundamentally, and there are some people in the city council saying, oh, let's use up the fund we have put away. No, that's our life insurance policy for next year. And next year is going to be an awful lot worse. Now, people always say, oh, you know, you talk doom and gloom, and then we always get through it. Yes, we get through it. Number one, because we have to get through it. By definition, we have to have a balanced budget. So we will do, whether it's raising property taxes or cutting expenses or having the economy better, we will get through it. But it is, for this coming year, we would have a few thousand reduction in workforce through attrition if it wasn't for the state. The state is there. It's a reality. With their cuts, remember back in January, I had said their budget cuts, the same government's budget, we'd have to cut 19,000 people. Now, yesterday I said 11,000 people. Why? Because the economy's a little bit better, and we've managed to save some things and move things around. So there's, you know, a little bit of room here. But everybody says, well, just don't cut my agency. You can't do that.
Do you think you might run into the same situation that the MTA did yesterday, where they were going to lay off, I think, 475 workers, something like that, and then there was a court order and a judge rule? Are you going to run into the same thing?
You can follow the law explicitly and still have a judge rule. The judge's ruling probably won't stand very long, and I would think the one with the MTA won't stand very long. But in the end, we can lay off people. The judge can say you're not doing it appropriately. There are some requirements. If you, for example, you close a company, this, I think, 60 days or whatever it is, you've got to give notice and that sort of thing. But if you're out of money, you just close the doors. And we can, you know, you lay off people all the time for non-performance or whatever. So I don't think that we'll have anything, and we'd be very careful. The trick is, what do you do if we pass our budget, which calls for, let's say, laying off Joe and Sally, and we're waiting for the state, and the state doesn't come through, so we have to lay off Joe and Sally, and let's say they're teachers, and we do it before the opening of school, and then all the teachers and the whole system move around because of these bumping rights with seniority, so every school gets disrupted with just Joe and Sally sadly losing their jobs, and then the state comes through with the money after the opening of school. What do you do? And I don't know the answer to that, because it would be so disruptive to put
Joe and Sally back.
Putting the egg back together might cause more chaos than just having fewer people. And I feel sorry for Joe and Sally, but our first interest is the kids.
Interesting.
And
you
can see yourself getting into those things. I don't know whether that's going to happen. What we're going to do is we're going to assume the governor's budget, which is the worst of the three, although not that much worse than the other two. And we will do what's necessary. We'll make the choices. In this day and age, I think protecting the size of the police department, given it's 4,000 or 5,000 fewer than it was back in 2002. And even though we've lived with this level and crime is down and staying down fundamentally, you know, we could probably do with a few more cops. It's getting more complex. But we are not going to have the luxury of having a few more or even the same number of everybody else. And every agency says, oh, but I'm just as important. Leadership is making a decision. The decision here is, number one, is going to keep this city safe. And the danger that we have is from crime in the streets more than terrorism. So all of the terrorism forces will keep to what we can, but you're much more likely to suffer a crime in the street, and that we've just got to spend. That's where we're going to spend our money.
What's the Michael Bloomberg view of Wall Street yesterday? What happened there?
It certainly looks like a computer order was entered by an accident or by a mistake in some code, I don't know, and started a cascade effect. Why there weren't circuit breakers?
That was my question this morning, too.
Whosever computer it is, and I don't know who, there's all sorts of speculation. Eventually you'll find out. Their computer should have had a circuit breaker. The story in the paper, and have no idea whether it's true, nor does anybody else, that instead of trying to sell $16 million worth of one stock, the computer said sell $16 billion of one stock. When it started cascading other computers that say, well, when things are going down, sell quickly, they all kicked in and the whole thing followed down. And then somebody realized and canceled the order, and then everything jumped back up. Keep in mind, the market still closed down something like 350 points yesterday. The real problem here is people are worried about Europe. The Greek government is in between a rock and a hard place. They have to make cuts. The public there is in the streets throwing rocks. Three people were killed during one of the protests. But in the end, they are going to have to make cuts. And there's a lot of dissension in Europe because the Greeks have a lot more vacation days and work less,
they've
in theory,
than
Germans do. And the Germans say, why should I spend my money to bail out Greece? Well, that's between the two of them. But we all suffer. And they have to come up with a solution. And if Greece doesn't figure out a ways through their problems, then Portugal and Spain and all these other countries. And keep in mind, that's a market for us. We sell a lot of stuff there. Tourists come from there. We have a big vested interest here in this country in terms of what goes on there. And incidentally, U.S.'s balance sheet is worse than Greece's.
I've been making that noise for months.
The difference is we're too big to fail. That's the difference. It is true.
And who
That's
comes to bail out us after we're too big to fail?
In theory, you don't have to, as long as you can print money and everybody else is printing money. It may be true.
Maybe so. Let us hope we don't find out. Okay, it's 11 now before 9 o'clock. Let me take one final break here. Full bank of phones, so we'll get to you next. All right, Mr. Bear, let's go right to the telephones. 5 minutes before 9 o'clock. Going to start with line 4. That happens to be Danny. Go, Danny. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, Danny.
Way Beach, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I was just recently appointed a new community board member in our community.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Do a good job. We need it.
About the future of all the community boards because of their operational cuts. How do you feel about the community boards, and what is your prediction on them?
Well, I've looked carefully. The community boards really are a sounding voice block for people, and you know, they give a lot of good input to the city. They give people a chance to say what they want to say in front of other people who come from their neighborhoods, and they each learn. Everybody learns from each other, and believe it or not, we really do change what we do based on input from community boards. Not every time, and you can't agree with every community board. There's 59 of them, and a lot of them go one way, a lot go another, so you can't do it every time. But we will, I think, not cut the funding for the community boards this year. In the very difficult budget times, it's hard to exempt anybody, but community boards really don't get that much money out of the $63 or $64 billion budget, and I think they really do provide a lot. And it's not just community boards. There are some small city agencies where, you know, if they've got five people, cutting them to four is a 20% cut in their staff and in their ability to do things. And it saves you, you know, a small amount of money. So I think community boards will come out of this budget cycle. You know, they'll always want more, but they won't get less. And that's, you know, in given the environment we have. And keep up the good work. Congratulations on your new job.
And a great question, Danny. Thank you very much. Dennis is up next. Dennis, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hi, Dennis.
Hello there, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good.
Listen, I wanted to ask you, you ran on a tenet of getting your grips around the MTA, and do you have a game plan? What do you plan on doing about taking care of some of these problems we have with the MTA?
Keep in mind, it's a state agency, so we can only do so much, but I'm not trying to walk away from it. If you go back to 2001 when I started running for mayor, I thought and said publicly a number of times that the city should get control over mass transit in the city. It's a very key part of our infrastructure, and it should be run by the city. Keep in mind, in the olden days, it was given to a separate agency so that everybody could blame somebody else, and the city didn't want to be blamed for lousy service and constantly higher rates, although it went from 5 to 10 cents or something on the subway. And I do think we should have a lot more say in the MTA. It is run by a very good guy. History will show David Patterson's best appointee far and away was Jay Walder to run the MTA. We're trying to work with him. We have a great relationship. We provide the security, remember, in the subway, at least on the platforms, and in the city things, not on the Long Island Railroad or the Metro North, and we're trying to find some ways. One of the things we did was we came up with a plan that would get the MTA a lot more money and give the, because it would get people out of their cars onto the subways and buses, which would give them more revenues, and we would toll the bridges and use that money to enhance the MTA's services and make them safer and more reliable and go to more areas. And we had everybody on board, all the unions, all the advocacy groups, all the newspapers, the public in all five boroughs by the time we got done. And then Albany said, we got a better idea, and so we're still waiting for it. Right now, there is just not enough money to keep the MTA going. And they are laying off people, and they don't have the monies to invest in the big capital projects. And then people say, oh, protect the workers, don't invest in the capital projects. If you do that, you'll never be able to get your costs under control. You have to bring in automation. You have to make it more attractive so that more people ride it, so we'll have more revenue. So we're working on it, but not easy. But at least I will say this, they got the right guy running the MTA.
All right. Rose, you are going to be next. We don't have a lot of time. Get right to your question, please.
Hi. Good morning, Mayor. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I'm calling from the Ridgewood Bushwick area regarding engine company number 271. We are located in this area, and we have senior housing, the hospital, schools, and I know the firemen are important to everyone, but we're asking maybe we could have this station kept open.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. What we'll try to do is find a ways to keep the number of firehouses that we have constant, keep them all open, maybe one or two that I think you really don't need, and reduce the number of pieces of equipment in 20 of them rather than close the firehouses. So there would be somebody to respond quickly to save lives. Wouldn't be as much you could get quickly to a fire, but that's the real world. And then attrition with the fire department rather than layoffs. So I don't think any firefighters are going to lose their jobs. A lot of them will retire. That will help. But we just cannot afford the number of pieces of equipment or the number of houses we have now. And we'd like to do the closing companies rather than closing firehouses.
That's it. We got to close this one out, Mr. Mayor. It always goes by way too fast. Thank you, and we will see you next Friday here on the John Gambling Show.